You're listening to Over the Top, a Great War podcast. I'm your host, Richard Cantu. Please join me as I talk about World War I history and preserve the stories from the soldiers who lived through it. Welcome back, folks. This is episode 60, and this will be the recap of 1915. The next episode, I'm going to go back to my roots of why I like the Great War so much, the horror aspect of it, and I hope you'll enjoy it. After that, I'll probably be kicking off 1916 with Verdun and then start moving up in the timeline again. For 1915, I started to dive more into the Africa and the Great War topic, then pulled away from that around the summertime. Then I was going to jump back into the Eastern Front, but then realized I might just be repeating myself. So I came to the conclusion this might be a good time to end 1915 and start up the next year of the war, but not before taking a much-needed breather. On my last episode I recorded, episode 59, I spoke about the fate of the SMS Königsberg. I absolutely enjoyed reading and learning about this ship terrorizing the British in the East Africa before being destroyed. It really is a fascinating story. Since I'm done talking about Africa in 1915, and if you like the history I spoke about, my inspiration and reading material came from the book called The Great War in Africa, written by Byron Farwell. I just touched on a few battles. The book contains much more history on the subject than what I presented. So if Africa and the Great War was your cup of tea, I urge you to grab a copy of this book. It won't disappoint. Okay, so before I jump into recapping 1915, I'll go over a few admin notes, or as I like to say, life updates. Something from the last episode I put out, I gave you just kind of an update on the show. I ended up getting COVID, so I don't know, what is this, my third or fourth time getting COVID? I didn't want to record this episode until I was fully kind of clear. My major symptoms of this round of COVID was just severe congestion. I sounded horrible. It wouldn't have made for a great show. So I'm all cleared up. And right after I cleared up, I actually flew to Mexico City for a vacation with my wife and a couple friends. If you want to get the recap of that, my buddy and I have a podcast, which I've mentioned on the show before, called the Jack Shack 2.0 podcast. We're going to do a full recap of our Mexico City trip. And if you're interested in listening about that or listening what I have to say about it, I think I've said this before when I said that I've had another podcast. I just want to forewarn you, it may not be your cup of tea. It's kind of locker room talk. Although my buddy and I have definitely cleaned it up over the years, and maybe it's just because we're getting older, but you've been forewarned. We curse a lot. We talk about anything that we want. Just a fun podcast. Honestly, my buddy and I did it to really stay connected, and it's a chance for us to get on weekly, if not biweekly, and shoot the shit, see how life's going, and try to solve the world's problems. But on this episode that we're going to be releasing next, it's going to be a recap of our Mexico City trip. It's a lot of fun things we did. We ate a lot of good food, so if you're interested in that, I hope you'll tune in to, again, the Jack Shack 2.0. We're going to do a recap of that. Over the summer, what else did I do? I got to see Metallica live in concert for the first time in my life. Big box checked off the bucket list with that one. Awesome show. So amazing the band is still together after, 40-something years? It's truly amazing. And yes, they played one. I also dabbed my hand in the model making hobby. And let me tell you, I absolutely suck at it. I mean, it was really bad. I found this YouTuber named Columbus Models. He does amazing World War I models. You got to see his stuff. I highly recommend you check out his YouTube page. I've been wanting something for the office, slash man cave slash podcast studio. So I thought a good World War One model would be cool. But I didn't want to start out big, so I tested myself out with a very small and inexpensive Spitfire model just to see how I would do. And yes, I realize this isn't World War One. Spitfire is pretty badass, though. My model making skills were so bad, I just threw it away. The gentleman at Columbus Models did email me and told me how I told him how it went. He said those aren't often the easiest, especially because how small they are. He advised me to build a tank, something a little bigger. Might be a better beginner experience. So I'm going to get a Mark V in the future and see what happens. Fingers crossed I do a little better. All right, last thing to touch base on the future of the show. I plan to see this podcast out to the very end, obviously the end of World War One. I love reading, learning, and talking about the Great War, so nothing has changed with that plan. There is a part of me that feels podcasts are dying out a bit. In a way, it's become oversaturated. I'm always trying to think ahead. What am I going to do after the show? Is this it? Do I just end it after the Treaty of Verdun? Could there be more opportunities? One thought for the future is to turn this into an animated series. It would be a combo of voice, video, animation, but obviously a very gory animation because I want to keep the integrity of the Great War and how horrific and scary it was. Animation has come a long way. Some people think of it just being cartoons. No, there's animation that looks real. Some that you look closely and you'll have to remind yourself these aren't real people or actors. I think there's a lot of opportunity for the Great War community to have the Great War come to life through realistic animation. Anyways, that's where my mind is at, thinking ahead for what I'd like to see myself doing in the future regarding World War One or this hobby of mine. But this is a ways away down the road to even start making a plan of attack. First thing is to complete the OTT podcast, and then I'll revisit the drawing board. But again, that is way down the road. Ah, yes, I should mention this. Since the end of June, I've changed my lifestyle. I've been eating super clean and haven't been drinking, aside from Mexico City. I've even cut my cigar smoking down, way down. Reason being why I'm not drinking for this episode. In fact, I'm drinking a glass of orange juice, which is still lovely. So I hate to let you down, but I just realized that I have too many good things in my life and I need to take better care of myself. And honestly, I'm feeling so good mentally and physically. This could possibly turn permanent. I just can't even remember having this much energy when I've stopped drinking. So I'm liking it. What else has been going on? I had to take about a month off from, maybe a little more than a month off from jiu-jitsu due to a torn meniscus. Because of that, I just started lifting weights in my garage. But being off the mats over a month, you'd think I'd be dying my first day back, but I wasn't. I actually felt great cardio-wise. Even sparred a few rounds and I felt great. And I really have to think it's because I've stopped drinking for quite some time and just really cleaned out my system. So the positives to giving up alcohol for now have been tremendous. I wish I would have done this early in my military career. But my friends and I, we liked to party when I was in the military, and that's what we did. With that, I hope all you listeners are in good health. And if you're not, it's never too late to make some adjustments, even if they're just minor ones. And of course, no judgment to those who still like a cold beverage or a glass of your favorite. Cheers to you all. All right. How about I recap 1915? When the Great War kicked off on the 28th of July, 1914, much of the world, including military leaders and politicians, believed it would be a swift victory for their side and that the troops should be home by Christmas. We know this wasn't the case at all. In fact, as months passed, it just kept getting worse and worse. The dead were piling up, and by January 1st, 1915, it had spun completely out of control. The better way to describe it is the world had gone mad. On New Year's Day, the HMS Formidable was hit by two German torpedoes launched by U-24, sending 546 sailors to their death. Not a good way to start out the first day of the new year. Then the Allies set their eyes on the Ottoman Empire after the Ottomans declared their side with the Germans. Although they didn't really have a choice at this point, the Allies were going to make a big move though. They planned for a combined British and French attack on the Dardanelles, aka Gallipoli, and by 1915 it was in full swing. By February, they were making their first push into the Dardanelles Straits. The Straits was important because it connected the Aegean Sea to the Black Sea, the Mediterranean world to the Balkan states. They also wanted to take Constantinople. Also, they wanted to pull Turkish troops away from the Eastern Front to help the Russians. On February 19th, Admiral Sackville-Carden ordered the fleet to the entry of the Straits and to begin shelling Turkish forts. The fleet consisted of 16 battleships, 20 destroyers, and an assortment of cruisers, along with 35 fishing trawlers, which were brought in to be used as minesweepers. Oh, and the HMS Queen Elizabeth, the new super dreadnought, was also present. Carden was firing at a safe distance, which ended up being too safe. The ships really couldn't see what they were firing at. Only 3% of the shells that were fired did any sort of damage. That pretty much equals to the amount of nothing being solved with that plan. Turkish guns were giving it to the fleet. Marines had to be sent ashore, with having some success taking out Turkish positions, but the situation was turning into a real poop show for the Allies. Soldiers, sailors, and Marines were being killed along with the ships being taken out. The push ultimately failed, so they pulled back and opted for strategically landing ground troops to eliminate the Turkish ground positions. These defensive strongholds had to be eliminated before the Allies could push forward with their fleet. There's so much details to this campaign just on the landings alone. I suggest you listen to my Gallipoli series if you haven't. In short, the Anzac Corps would land north of Gallipoli between Gabatepe and Suvla Bay. The British 29th would land at the southern portion in Cape Helles, covering beaches Y, X, W, V, and S. The French would land across the water on the Asia side at Kumkale. Fast forwarding to the end of the campaign, the British finally realized that eliminating the Turkish ground positions at Gallipoli was an impossible task. They eventually would evacuate. This was a big win for the Turks, and not only an atrocious loss for the British, but really an atrocious loss of life on both sides. Thousands upon thousands of soldiers lost their lives. Well over 100,000. Close to 130,000 to be more accurate. This was really one of the first campaigns of 1915 where this amount of soldiers were sent into suicidal style attacks. Ordered by their officers, who were ordered by the higher-ups, the men on the ground were ordered to go forth and die. And in the end, no real ground was gained. It's extremely sad. The Ottoman Colonel Mustafa Kemal made a name for himself, forever being remembered as the hero of Gallipoli by his people. Mustafa's career comes with controversy, though. You'll have to read more about him on your own. The number of estimated casualties was something between 400 and 500,000. The campaign lasted until the beginning of January 1916. And soldiers weren't the only ones who lost their lives at the hands of the war. Civilians, hundreds of them, would perish in 1915 alone. Take the sinking of the Lusitania. In August of 1915, the British implemented a naval blockade against the Germans in the North Sea. This pissed off Kaiser Wilhelm, and he basically gave his navy the green light to hunt and kill any British ship or any ally vessel supporting the war. Germany did put out a warning that any ship in the so-called war zone would likely be fired upon. Cunard Lines, which owned the Lusitania, chose to ignore this. On May 5, 1915, the ship was docked at Pier 54 in New York, ready to depart, which would have made it the 202nd successful transatlantic voyage, but this wasn't going to be a successful trip for the ship. On May 7th, just a little after 1400 hours off the coast of Ireland, Germany's U-20 spotted the Lusitania and fired its torpedoes. It only took 18 minutes from the time the Lusitania was hit until it was completely submerged in the North Atlantic off the coast of Ireland. 1,198 civilians perished in the attack, 94 of them being children. The Great War proved that nobody was safe, not even youngins. As tragic as that is, there's two other events during the war in 1915 that set mankind aside from being men who fought honorably in wars to complete, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to say inhuman because animals don't even do this. I'll just say evil because it's pure acts of evil. These events really opened the door to hell. In January of 1915, Fritz Haber, the director of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Physical Chemistry in Berlin, suggested to the chief of staff, Erich von Falkenhayn, that they use chemical weapons on their enemies. The chemical recommendation was chlorine gas. When chlorine combines with water, it forms into hydrochloric acid. The human body is 80% water. The chlorine gas would have a lethal effect on the lungs, eyes, and mucous membrane. Not only would the eyes begin to severely burn, a person who breathed the gas would quickly start to choke and drown from toxic fluid filling the lungs. A death that would be extremely agonizing. Falkenhayn immediately approved Haber's trials for the new weapon, eventually ordering the production of thousands of cylinders and named it Operation Disinfection. Warnings did go out. POWs were talking, warning the British, French, and Canadians that a gas attack was imminent. One French divisional commander named Edmund Ferry took this serious. He began to pull his men from the front lines. But don't be too quick to give Ferry credit for being a good commander, because all he did was replace them with colonial and territorial soldiers. On Thursday, April 22nd, it was a sunny day on the Ypres salient. Yet, Ypres was far from being calm. From the 12th to the 21st, the British fought for Hill 60, a high point advantage on the salient. On the 17th, the British tunneled underneath the hill and detonated a chamber, sending a massive amount of earth and dead flying through the air. Nobody really knows for sure just how many Germans died in the explosion. Some were just obliterated. After the explosion, it was a fierce fighting through the 21st. Then, on the 22nd of April, the front lines went quiet, but the Germans put a hard shelling on the town of Ypres to create a distraction for what was about to come. At 5 p.m., the German chemical pioneers released 168 tons of chlorine gas placed along a 6-kilometer front. The worst to get it was the French Algerian colonial soldiers from the 45th Division. Two huge clouds merged into one as it passed through them. Just after the odd-colored cloud reached them, the soldiers began to yell in agony and horror. Men were seen clawing at their eyes as if they were on fire. Then they began to violently choke as their airway seized up. Then came the gurgling as they drowned in acid filling their lungs. Then came death. A new type of death introduced in a new type of warfare that forever changed the way wars would be fought. Sadly, chemical weapons are still being produced today. This wasn't honorable. This wasn't even barbaric. This was just pure evil. To fight and conquer an enemy is one thing, but to exterminate them like roaches or rodents is taking warfare to another level of hell. For military warfare, aside from the atomic bomb, this could be one of the most important and cruelest military inventions in the 20th century. I say important because it marks a real downfall for man. Soldiers who lived through gas attacks said it was the most terrible thing you could imagine. Even Adolf Hitler opposed using deadly gas in the Second World War in fear of the Allies using it back on them. So, this is definitely one of the worst events, in my opinion, for the Great War in 1915. This also was the start of the Second Battle of Ypres, which lasted from April 22, 1915 to May 25, 1915. This forced the British, French, and Canadians to withdraw back 3 miles into the city of Ypres. This was seen as a big drive forward for the Germans, but at what cost or by what human standards had to be disregarded? They ended up launching a second gas attack against the Canadian division on April 24th. Sadly, this next event doesn't get any better. The Armenian Genocide. The truth is, there had been tension between the Turkish Ottomans and the Armenians long before the Great War. Mainly because the greater part of the Armenian population was Christian, and they got along good with the Russians, and the Ottoman Empire had been to war with Russia on several occasions prior to the Great War. Armenians, even the Greeks and Assyrians, were always treated differently and looked down upon by the Muslims of the Ottoman Empire. They wanted to Turkify the empire after the Young Turks Revolution. By December 1914, Turkey had chosen a side. They were with the Germans. Russia was their enemy now. Russia had been their enemy, but it's been declared, I guess, that their enemy. Russia had begun its push into the Caucasus Mountains that bordered eastern Turkey. There was a big population of Armenians there. The Turkish army launched an offensive with roughly around 100,000 troops. A lot of Armenians were forced into Ottoman service. The Turkish Third Army was destroyed. It's estimated that around 80,000 Turkish soldiers were either killed or taken prisoner. Turkey, of course, blamed the Armenians for the loss. Reason being, they accused two Armenian brigades of deserting and joining the Russians in the fight. Turkey believed there was a plot against them by the Armenians. Again, there was beef before the war, and this was Turkey's excuse to cause Armenians human suffering like nobody had seen before, at least in the 20th century. Genghis Khan was responsible for killing, what, like 40 million people or something? Well, Turkish Çetes were recruited to become the government's killing squad. The Çetes literally were criminals, violent ones, who were led out of jail with the task of eliminating the Armenian population in return for their freedom. Every man, woman, no matter how old or how young, yes, even children, if they were Armenian, they were a target of the Çetes. In April of 1915, the deportations and the genocide began. Some put up a fight, but were executed. They brought in dogs to feed off the dead. Dogs were literally ripping apart bodies, fighting over the meat. Countless numbers of women and young girls, children, were raped, then executed, often right in front of the family members and other Armenians. They were forced marched to Aleppo Konya, and Eregli. But most didn't make it. As they passed through towns, the starving would beg for food and water, but the citizens of the towns were warned not to give them anything or they also would be killed. Men were usually sent in another direction from the women and children. Pregnant women who gave birth drowned or smothered the baby to avoid having their skulls crushed in by the Chetes. It was reported that the Chetes would grab the babies by their legs and swing it violently onto rocks until their skulls crushed open. Men were tortured beyond ways you can imagine, and the horrors go on well into the fall of 1915. The little population that somehow managed to survive were put into concentration camps. In fact, the massacres continued on through 1916. By 1917, it really stopped mainly because there was hardly any Armenians left for the Chetes to murder. And the world was made aware of this around June of 1915 when the Red Cross began reporting the murders to world leaders. Even German delegates were reporting this, but nobody stepped in. It's estimated that over 1 million Armenians lost their lives during the deportation and genocide. Only the devil could engineer such evil, sending his demons to cause so much suffering and murder. Going back to when I scripted this episode, it was a tough one. I mean, this isn't a subject that is the most exciting to talk about, but it very much is related to the Great War, just as much as the Holocaust is related to the Second World War. With all the death and destruction of the Great War, this single-handedly was the most evil, most gruesome, the worst act of human suffering the war created. Was the war to blame? Would it have happened if the war didn't break out? I don't know. Who knows? But it did happen. March of 1915 brought on the Battle of Neuve Chapelle. It wasn't a long battle by any means, but a bloody one, no doubt. It was around this time when Joseph Joffre began doubting the British capabilities to achieve any success in the war. He was sort of nudging them to shoulder more share of their weight. Sir John French was in a way shocked at Joffre on believing in the British capabilities. So he agreed to an all-British offensive at Neuve Chapelle, which would push up to Aubers Ridge. This would be the first solo BEF attack on German trenches. The attack would be conducted by the British 4th Corps from the 1st Army and the Indian Corps led by Sir Douglas Haig. The ruined city of Neuve Chapelle became a death zone with German snipers hiding in every corner, causing havoc on the British. German soldiers would often stay in a spot for a couple of days, waiting for the enemy to show themselves. This was a very dangerous area to have yourself exposed to back then, if you were considered an enemy. The British plan of attack was quite simple. Bombard the front line trenches with artillery, then shift fire to the rear once the infantry was launched. Shifting the fire would also kill the fleeing Germans, along with killing reinforcements moving up. Pretty straightforward for World War I standards. The attack kicked off on March 10th at 0730 hours. It's estimated that over 200,000 artillery rounds were fired during the Battle of Neuve Chapelle, which ended on March 13th, 1915. But the majority of those shells were fired just in the first 35 minutes before the infantry went over the top. Firing this many rounds in such a short period of time also raised a red flag that they were firing more than they were producing. This was a problem. The Battle of Neuve Chapelle exposed a few things. One, the British indeed were capable of conducting their own attacks, and it also exposed flaws in their communication lines. During the pre-bombardment, the guns concentrated on the center of the German trench line, and the Germans who were in the center front were completely pulverized, obviously. The British moving up through the center pretty much got the front trench with rather ease, I'll say that. The right and left lines moving up, that's a different story. Because the shells weren't so much concentrated in those areas, the Germans remained in place, almost untouched. And when the British were seen moving up, the machine guns opened up and tore them apart. It was a very gruesome scene. Overall, the BEF took Neuve Chapelle, but shortly after it began to break down. Leadership began to fall apart. There was mass confusion. Mistakes were being made. The troops were really left in the dark. This gave the Germans time to regather themselves along with bringing reinforcements up. The Germans were growing stronger by the day, and the British couldn't hold on. The British took over 11,500 casualties and the Germans over 8,500. In September of 1915, south of Neuve Chapelle, a small mining town between Lens and La Bassée called Laws became the site of some of the, I'd say, one of the bloodiest battles in 1915. This would also be the battle where the British would use gas against the Germans in retaliation for the April 22nd gas attack at Ypres. An estimated 60,000 casualties were taken in just a few weeks' time, with most of them occurring during the first 24 hours of the battle. The overall strategy was to have the British support a new offensive in which the French would launch its 1st and 10th armies in the Lens-Arras region, while the Tommies assaulted through La Bassée and the Laws area. There's a difference between Lens, did I say that right? Lens-Arras area and then the Laws. I was confusing my own self there. Well, the British managed to penetrate the line by 2 miles and captured 8,000 yards of German trench line. However, those gains in the end were lost, and the overall goal of breaking through and holding the German lines was not achieved. Overall, the artillery and gas attacks at the beginning did little damage. The Germans proved to have better defensive positions than what the Allies expected. 1915 also gave birth to the Italian front. A front that's not talked about as much as it should be because it is a big one. Big enough where around 1 million soldiers lost their lives either from fighting, disease, Mother Nature, or as prisoner of war. Through political persuasion, on April 26th, Italy's Prime Minister Antonio Salandra committed the allegiance to the Allies and declared war against Austria. This opened up with the First Battle of Isonzo in June through the Fourth Battle of Isonzo ending in December. It also introduced the world to Alpine warfare. The last battle of the Isonzo was in November of 1917, which was the 12th battle of the Isonzo. The 5th through 12th battles will be discussed in a later episode. The battles were bloody, gory, the dead rotting, then would become frozen until the spring of 1916. There's a lot of information on the Italian front. I highly recommend you listen to that series. I believe it was episode 32 through 34. I also did a series on the Ottoman Empire and, of course, the Africa Front for 1915. In a quick glance, that was the topics that OTT covered for the Great War 1915. And, of course, what means the most to me is I hope you enjoyed it. 1916 is going to be a great one. There's some big hitting battles during this year of the war. The next episode, episode 61, is going to be a little different. Again, I'm trying to bring back a little more horror to the show, and I hope I can capture this for you. And after that, I'll be moving into Verdun, and then we'll just start moving forward into the timeline of 1916. Thank you for listening and for your continued support for the show. Again, without you fans, you guys supporting the show, you listening, I wouldn't even have a podcast. So thank you, everyone. It means I say that near and dear to my heart. All right, everybody. You guys be safe. Take care of yourselves. I hope you're in good health. Take care, everyone.